This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Welcome back to PTBN's NBA Team Podcast. I am one of your co-hosts, Andrew Reich, and I am joined by my other co-host, Adam Murray.
Good afternoon, morning, evening, whenever you're listening to this. It's been quite a crazy
week, yeah.
Crazy little week, hasn't it?
It's been nuts. You know, I think we anticipated that with the free agency going forward with transactions, and then a trade here and a trade there after the coming off the heels of the NBA draft. But yeah, this one has been especially... crazy with the constant Twitter updates and social media sort of peeking in. People are now announcing their teams and who they're signing with, like on Instagram and Twitter, and you know, it's almost like to the point where you're like literally glued to your device to see where teams are, where players are going, because that's kind of the way that they like to get the message out. There's no decisions, I guess you could say. There's no televised press conferences because they can't announce these deals until, you know, signing period begins at the end of this week. So, you know, some people are just jumping the gun so that they can announce it to all their fans, you know.
Yeah, there's no drama because, you know, for restricted free agents, oh, well, the other team has a couple days to sign. Will they? Won't they? What goes on? Now it's just like, hey, I sign an offer sheet. Nah, you're good. Bye. And it's just everything is instantaneous now.
Yeah, and I mean, a lot of these deals, some of them were instantaneous. Like, we knew automatically at the stroke of midnight on July 1st that some of these deals were going to get wrapped up pretty fast, you know. For example, like Anthony Davis getting his max extension, not a shock at all. Some people were a little wild by the number of dollars he got per his deal, you know, 5 years and $145 million. The thing is, though, the upcoming salary cap bump over the next few years with the new TV deal, it's influencing so many of these deals where teams are just not scared to spend. Whereas we were going through these two or three or four years, you know, after the lockout, where teams were, kind of, be honest, Adam, they were like scared to death of spending extra money and going over the cap.
Well, now that they sort of know what's going on, and it's sort of like a two-way street. A, teams were willing to spend a little bit more than they were, you know, usually are, give deals a little bit higher than they should be. And players, it was going to be, oh, everybody's just going to sign for 1 year and then opt out and it'll be madness next year. But no, a lot of players, like, no, I want security. I'd rather have $80 million now than hope for $140 2 years from now.
Yeah, and then, you know, we saw that with Damian Lillard. He got, I think, it was in the neighborhood of like 5 years and $120 million. He's been an all-star twice over now, so... I mean, you can make the case that he was deserved. Did he make the All-Star team last year? I'm trying to remember now. I know he did it in 2014, but...
Then he's an All-Star. It doesn't matter whether you make it once or 1,000 times. But I think we should just start there with big losers of free agency. It would have to be Portland. He's the only one who returned. Like, everyone else was like, thank you, goodbye.
Like, you would definitely call Portland, hands down, like kind of one of the casualties of the free agency period this year.
Okay, you're gonna lose your top guy, but okay, then your second top guy goes, and your third time you lose four.
They traded Batum. You know, I think they were done with him.
They lost four starters, and then replaced them really with, you know, you could say, oh well, they're trying to rebuild, and they're trying to not take too many steps back, but. You know, Gerald Henderson, Mason Plumlee, and Noah Vonleh are not, and Ed Davis are not really going to bring you to the playoffs.
The other acquisition that they had actually through free agency was actually one of the first signings that kind of wowed people because people didn't think he was worth that. Was Al-Farouq Aminu. He was formerly a Hornet, you know, he was traded in the Chris Paul deal, and then he wound up going to the Dallas Mavericks. And he played okay in the playoffs. It seemed like he was the only guy that could actually guard James Harden for the Mavericks, which isn't saying much because nobody on Dallas could play defense. So he got a 4-year, $30 million deal. Not sure about the terms about his opt-out or if it's a team option on the last year of his deal. But that one was a little bit sketchy. Of all the deals, it was probably that one and Reggie Jackson's deal that kind of made me go, what? You know?
Yeah, that was the, okay, we're losing him, but we're going to hold everybody together. We got a nice D guy, nice glue guy. Oh, the floodgates just opened. Whoops.
Yeah, and now so
you're stuck with him for 4 years.
All right, now there's a little bit of controversy surrounding Portland because of the fact that, you know, one of the assistant coach, Kim Hughes, very well-respected coach, you know, underneath Terry Stotts, he basically announced that, you know, in an interview that LaMarcus was going to be gone, you know, which was kind of common knowledge at that point, but the GM, Neil O'Shea, refused to admit it, you know, until the decision was made by him on Twitter to join the San Antonio Spurs, which had been heavily rumored over the last couple of months. But he fired Kim Hughes. I mean, do you think that the secrecy has sort of gone a little bit too far with these GMs where they need to just wake up and realize, okay, everybody knows. There's so much transparency on these deals. Like, everybody knows what's going on almost.
Well, you need a fall guy. You can't have the face of your franchise and, you know, a year ago he was saying he was going to re-up and he loves it there and he's going to retire there and be the greatest Blazer of all time. And all of a sudden, you know, 1 year later he's gone. So you need a fall guy for everything. And, you know, the GM is not going to blame himself. So, you know, it's the big man coach.
Does Aldridge deserve the hate for leaving Portland?
I don't think he deserves the hate because he didn't play it off like a scumbag.
Yeah, is it sort of like kind of when Chris Bosh left Toronto? Where, you know, he did what he could there for the years he was there. He didn't loaf it. But when the opportunity came and he had a good chance to, you know, win a championship, he took it.
Well, yeah, it's the old greener pastures type thing. It's, you know, I gave you my time. You know, very classy. Took, you know, the full page article. Thank you, fans. Thanks, everything. At no point is he like, fuck Portland. Fuck, you know, everybody. Fuck the administration. It's just like, nah, it was good, but I want to be home with my friends, and okay.
Now,
so it happens.
Now, like we were talking about, because of the new money that's popping up over the next season after 2016 because of the television contract, you know, which might be interrupted by a lockout after the 2017 season, that would, you know, that's far down the line, but it's very likely that they're going to try to figure out a way to, like, you know, incrementally put in the salary cap if possible. But for now, it's pretty much an open book, and the checkbooks are opening big. What was the one deal, like, going into the first week of the season that really surprised you in terms of the money he got?
Well, for one, the incremental cap, I believe, is dead with, you know, I have no idea how Cleveland signed literally everybody to the deals they did. And, you know, like, there's a lot of teams are just going to say, even, you know, Draymond Green, they're like, okay, we'll pay the super high tax for 1 year because we know we'll all be under the cap.
Well, and not only that, but we know we're going to be good.
Yeah, like
there's a lot of teams like the Nuggets, the Sixers, you know, I guess you could argue the Knicks, we'll get to them in a second, where they really kind of held back because they weren't able to land the big name. So they just kind of, either they did nothing, like Philadelphia has, or they just made one small deal after another, like New York did.
Yeah, New York's just, you know, New York and LA are just filling out their rosters.
Now,
and
some of those deals the Knicks made were kind of curious, like 4 years, $16 million for Kyle O'Quinn, Robin Lopez getting 4 years of $54 million as a center. Another one that I noticed was Derek Williams. He got 2 years and $10 million. That's actually not the worst because he has an opt-out after year one. So it's quite possible you'll only have to pay Derek Williams $5 million. So I don't really hate that deal too much.
Well, you know, it's good he came, he went from being the punching bag of the number two pick of being a complete failure to, you know what, he's kind of respectable. Unlike, you know, Thomas Robinson, who had to take the veteran minimum to bet on himself.
Yeah, with the Nets, yeah.
You know, which is also a very good signing because he'll be backing up, you know, Brook Lopez and Thaddeus Young, and he could, you know, fill in either position now that he's sort of learning, you know, just don't go 5 feet away from the basket, just stay there. But as for best deals, you know, we'll get into the dysfunction that is Sacramento, but getting Rondo for basically what he's been getting and somebody who, you know, needs to be on super good behavior and needs to salvage his sort of career, getting him for $10 million is pretty good considering they had nobody.
Yeah, but the preemptive strike that they did on that trade where they gave up, you know, multiple, you know, first round picks, you know, one being an a protected first round pick next season, and then the right to swap in the coming years after that, along with Nick's. Now, listen, you and I have never been a fan of Jason Thompson. We've always felt like he was just sort of a home discount type of player that just stuck around in Sacramento and wound up playing his way into a contract that, to be kind of like Gerald Henderson, that he really didn't deserve. But, you know, they were able to ship that deal away. And then Carl Landry, who's kind of on his last legs, that was getting rid of those contracts was actually not the worst. Trading away Nick Stauskas, who's only a rookie, and then trading away all those draft picks for potential cap space, about $32 million, that you wound up not using as well as you probably had kind of envisioned when you first started the free agency, that was a big strikeout. That was probably my biggest loser.
Yeah, that's just complete dysfunction and who's in charge and, you know, Vivek's thinking of firing, firing George Karl already because of the drama and whatnot. But, okay, so they struck out on Wesley Matthews. They struck out on Monta Ellis. They reportedly offered Tobias Harris a max deal and he turned it down. Everybody turned down more money because...
Yeah, Wesley Matthews, that I heard, turned out quite a bit.
Yeah, they all turned down a lot of money because of the dysfunction. But, you know, in the end, the signings they did get, Kosta Kufos, didn't overpay for him. Marco Bellinelli, who we both like.
Mm-hmm. And they got Marco for small potatoes, if you ask me, as a shooter. 3 years and $19 million. That's probably the going rate for, you know, a tall shooting guard. That's actually pretty good.
Yeah, and, you know, re-signing Omri Caspi as backup and Willie Cauley-Stein, those aren't bad signings in the end. You know, from being just, they swung for the fences, they traded their picks away and everything, and they missed on everybody. But they got nice quality backup depth, nice role guys who don't really bring much drama. And then, like I said, Rondo having to be on good behavior, just all he has to do is just lob it up to Boogie every time, and bam, it'll be the new Lob City.
Do you feel like Rondo's betting on himself in Sacramento? That, you know, it's kind of like a Monta Ellis situation in Dallas where the moment he shows that he can still play and be on good behavior that he'll be gone?
Well, it's more of his agent telling him to be on good behavior or less, you know, that $9 million deal next year will become a, you know, $7 million deal and keep shrinking. Mm-hmm. And you'll just be a backup and then all of a sudden you'll be in the Chinese League because, you know, like our tests, you're too much, you're not worth the drama. But, you know, also another thing with Sacramento... At what point is Philly going to be good? So let's say you swap 2017 and 2019 picks.
Mm-hmm.
I don't see Philly being good in 2 years. So, okay, well, we're not going to swap because Philly has a better pick.
Because they're going to have a worse record more likely. And
yeah, so the swap, you know, the swap picks, and as much as we made fun of, you know, Brooklyn for doing it, due to their cap situation, it didn't really hurt them. Because the players they got at 15 versus the one they got at 29, and they wanted to just trade for, you know, Rondé, Hollis-Jefferson. Anyways, it was...
I get your point there with the fact that swapping the picks might not be as impactful because of the fact that Philly might be bad anyway and they aren't going to swap because you wouldn't swap for a lower pick. However, you know, what they got with the cash base that they pushed along with that deal, I just felt like it was kind of... They fell on their face a little bit.
Yeah, they kind of did, but again, it wasn't the complete flop that, you know, Dallas or Houston, you know, Dallas would have where, all right, we sold the farm, we're going to get Chris Bosh, we're going to get Paul Gasol, and nobody comes over, and you know, it's, they salvaged something, unlike, you know, really, you know, what you mentioned before, losers, you know, New York... And L.A., just, you know, we're the destination to be. New York, just, you know, we got Aflalo, who really nobody's a fan of anymore.
Yeah, at 2 years and $16 million, $8 million per year, he has an opt-out after year one. I don't know. I don't think he's really worth that much. I would put him somewhere in the vicinity about 6.5.
You know, so he's your, by default, you're starting two.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know...
Well, especially with Tim Hardaway Jr. gone in that trade, you know, for Jerry and Grant, the draft pick.
You know, so I guess right now at this point you have Cleanthony Early who's starting three.
Yeah.
No, it's you have a lot of holes to fill, and you know, okay, Derek Williams will give you solid minutes, and he's learning to play within himself. Robin Lopez, underrated as a center, but still not a top five one, and, you know, it's just you're going to try to be slavish to the triangle again, just another long year for them. And then the Lakers, who are just clueless, and, you know, you could be in Hollywood movies, and you could live in L.A., but, yo, I got a home in Orange County. But you'll be Hollywood, and you can.
You're alluding to the fact that they had a meeting involving Time Warner Media with LaMarcus Aldridge, and it did not go well. And especially when LaMarcus started asking basketball related questions with like Kobe and Byron Scott, and he felt unimpressed, is what the word I had heard. Unimpressed.
Yeah, and then you know you get Lou Williams, who of all teams to sign with, he chose the Lakers, which
now 3 years and $21 million is actually not bad for a player like
that's him. That's about where he should usually fit in, and mm-hmm. Old one might be 3-15. Now you're 3-21. Brandon Bass just replaced that Davis, and Roy Hibbert is just going to be a big guy for them. So they didn't add anybody, and on that team with Kobe, Lou Williams, and Swaggy P, who is going to pass that ball?
Yeah, how long is Brass's deal? Is it 3 years or 2 years? I can't remember.
The terms haven't been... They're waiting to see where other pieces fall, so he just signed in principle.
Yeah, let's talk about the Celtics, since you talked about Bass leaving the Celtics. It feels like Danny Ainge, because he has all those draft picks, he just used four of them, and obviously, we're likely to see all four of them playing in Summer League, along with Marcus Smart, which is already underway in Orlando and Utah. They're going to be playing in Las Vegas in the next week. It feels like he's kind of taking temporary signings like Amir. Now, Amir Johnson, he gave good money to. He gave him 2 years and $24 million, but it's only a two-year deal. And Jonas Jerebko is only a two-year deal. Does it feel like Ainge is sort of holding out to see how these draft picks sort of unfold because there's so many traded picks?
Well, it's sort of, the Celtics, a lot of people put as big losers, and basically they kind of are because they're in that nether Utah region of, it's sort of Denver where our players are sort of good, but... We don't have it all together. The Amir Johnson deal is essentially a one-year deal with a team option.
Uh-huh.
So, by default, he'll be the starting power forward, which they have, or starting...
They needed one for sure.
They need a rebounder, and, since they got Jarrell Martin, that replaced Bass. But it's just they're just one of those teams who sort of just filled out their roster.
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't, they're like, okay, we're going to go after... other teams are signing. They're like, well, we're hoping for Kevin Love, and... where it is, Orlando's, not going to max out.
Yeah. Now, Jay Crowder, for 5 years and $35 million, was actually a sneaky deal, because going forward, that's actually going to look like a bargain, because it's a five-year contract.
Well, the 3-and-D guy is now becoming a more valuable commodity, and as you've seen with Al Farouq Aminu getting, his four-year deal, you have...
Now, why did Patrick Beverley only get 4 years and $23 million,
because he's a point guard. A point guard should automatically, a point guard should either be A, you can't shoot, but you're like Rubio or Vasquez or Rondo, where you could pass the ball literally through, the tiniest hole and be the greatest passer in the world, or you should automatically be the three guy, and he's undersized.
Mm-hmm,
and to be a 3-and-D point guard, you can't defend multiple positions.
Yes.
So you're sort of, your skill set is already limited.
Yeah, you need the versatility. You need to at least be able to get away with playing small forward for 38 minutes that you're on the court, depending on if you're playing starters minutes. Now, Wesley Matthews was probably playing himself into a pretty good contract before he tore his Achilles tendon. But he wound up probably, at the end of the day, getting the money that he wanted before the injury. 4 years, $52 million with the Dallas Mavericks. And then, obviously, the other big one that the Mavericks landed was getting DeAndre Jordan on a max contract, 4 years and $80 million away from the L.A. Clippers. It felt like 0 hour here for the Mavericks. You lost Monte Ellis. The Rajon Rondo deal blew up in your face. They had to make a couple of other moves because they knew they were having some other departures down the road. And it seemed like that Mark Cuban really needed to land one this time, whereas he had kind of struck out for the last few years with guys like Darren Williams and Dwight Howard. And he definitely scored on two big deals, money-wise, but do you think the results are going to show?
For Dallas... I would even pose the question, do you think, are they even a playoff team?
their bench is
they don't have a bench.
Yeah, they have none. You know, they lost so many of them. You know, they traded away Shane Larkin last year. Aminu is gone. They re-signed J.J. Barea, who's kind of like a lifetime Mav, I guess you could say, one of those types. But after that, I mean, yeah, we're kind of reaching here. You know, we had, you know, Chandler Parsons bailed on him. Vince Carter left to go to Memphis and try to win there.
You know, they right now their bench is Charlie Villanueva,
who just re-signed, yeah. Very small deal, yeah. It's tough. But, you know, DeAndre Jordan, I'm sure they have big plans for him on the offensive end and the defensive end. Even though some people say that he's overrated as a defender, that just because you're a great rebounder doesn't make you a great defender. I've heard that about DeAndre Jordan. Wesley Matthews, I mean, do you think that was an overpricing for Matthews, or do you think that was just about right for, you know, a small forward who can
play the 3-D? If he didn't tear his ACL, that's sort of the high, kind of the higher end of where, you know, his, you know, 57 over 4 years. Because he's not like a top talent, and, you know, if you're going to go spend the money, you know, it's...
Well, that's the problem I have with Damari Carroll's contract. You know, just to kind of transition over to the Raptors, they got him for 4 years at $60 million. You know, it's good to be a junkyard dog. It's good to be, like, kind of like that, you know, role player that kind of goes under the shadows and be able to earn praise, you know, as the free agency kicks in. But once you score on that big deal, I mean, it feels like there's a lot more pressure on you to perform every night. Whereas, you know, most times, you know, even at a $6 million salary, you know, players can just go out there and, you know, play and try to overachieve. You know, I kind of worry about the Damari Carroll deal. I think that might blow up in Toronto's face down the road.
Well, you know, they got Damari Carroll and Corey Joseph, but the strange roster upheaval they did. You get rid of Vasquez, you get, you know, a rookie point guard as a backup. You get, you know, Luke Ridenour, who's on his eighth team in the past 2 weeks.
Yes.
You overpay Corey Joseph, and you overpay Damari Carroll for defense, but now you have no, you know, you lost your starting power forward, and all you have is Hansborough and Patrick Patterson to fill the hole. And, you know, reports were, you know, Lou Williams said he let Toronto match it if they wanted. They're like, no.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, well, that's just strange.
Masai Ujiri, it seems like he wants to make a big move, but he realized during draft time when he kind of put... There was a rumor thrown out there, Lord knows if it's true or not, that he made all the players available, including Kyle Lowry and DeMar DeRozan, and nobody bid on it. And he wound up staying, you know... You know, the only deal he was able to score was the Gravis Vasquez deal, and out of it he got Norman Powell with a second-round pick. But, you know, it feels like he's trying to make a big deal, but he hasn't really scored on it yet, so he forced a signing with Damari Carroll, said, look, I'll give you more than anybody else can offer you as a role player. And Carroll, you know, God bless Damari Carroll. He got the money that he wanted, you know. Now, on the flip side with the Hawks, where does that leave them? They re-signed Paul Millsap. They got Tiago Splitter for basically nothing because the Spurs were dumping his salary to try to score on LaMarcus Aldridge, which they did. But for Atlanta, where does the absence of Carroll leave them going forward?
Well, that's the ultimate question, is what type of team are they now? It's like, you know, the number one team in the East, all of a sudden now I look at the team and it's just like, you get Splitter, you get Walter Tavares, you know, the player from... Yeah, who I liked from last year from the draft. You lose your three guys, so now you replace it with Tim Hardaway Jr. You know, now you're a big man team.
Mm-hmm.
So, you got five, six big men now, and you lost your three. So,
yeah.
They took a major step back, I think.
Well, yeah, that's like I said. I think that was one of those things where I think Carroll may have just been better off staying there. I've seen that a couple of occasions where a player just seems to fit so much nicer on a team, and when he leaves, it's kind of a lose-lose because the team suffers because they lost one of their key components, and then the player suffers because it turns out that the team he went to isn't really the best destination.
It turns out he was a system player as opposed to just a good...
I'm kind of scared with Damari Carroll. That's what we're winding up with. And he might
have
been...
Yeah, but the thing is, you know, with 3-D is like the one now, you know, the new position where you don't need to be a system player because all you have to do is just literally you know, stand in the corner and then just don't let the guy in front of you pass you.
Did you think Brooklyn made a mistake signing up Brook Lopez and Thaddeus Young and committing $110 million over the next 3 to 4 years?
That made no sense. As, you know, it's, those were just panic moves and just seemed like they were bidding against themselves to get these guys, and now, you know, they're...
Yeah, that's what I was wondering. Where was the going rate for Thaddeus Young, like, and Brook Lopez? Like, I know Brook had a really good, you know, postseason in, like, last month of the season, you know, to help Brooklyn get into the playoffs. They challenged Atlanta a little bit. But I don't know if he's a max player. And I know Thaddeus Young isn't worth, you know, 4 years and $50 million. I would kind of put him more in the range of about $10 to $9
million. Yeah, but that's the new... That's the new system, is he got paid off the new contract as opposed to the old one. No, Thaddeus Young is sort of like, you know, you could say, you know, back in the, you know, he's like, oh, he's like Wesley Matthews, who got paid more than him. And, oh, okay, he's, you know, the people around him got paid more than they should have. So, mm-hmm. By default, his numbers sort of went up. And those deals were sort of questionable, but again, you know, we mentioned, you know, they got Thomas Robinson for nothing. They got a serviceable backup at Shane Larkin for nothing.
Yeah, 2 years and $3 million is like peanuts.
You know, also we mentioned Cliff Alexander, the number one high school kid last year who got drafted.
Yeah.
You know, he's on their summer league team, and by all accounts will most likely be a veteran. You know, he'll sign to the team, you know, most likely, for nothing. And I don't know. It's just one of those desperation. You didn't lose anybody besides Plumlee, but you just paid a lot more money for the same mediocre team you had.
Yeah, along with getting Rondae Hollis-Jefferson and small forward. They needed youth, so that definitely helped them out a little bit. Greg Monroe, I've heard, is going to be the oldest player on the Milwaukee Bucks team at 25 years of age. He had betted on himself by taking the qualifying offer, which basically guaranteed he wasn't going back to Detroit. Had a decent year, and he got paid pretty nicely by Milwaukee, 3 years and $50 million. I just worry about the fit there. Do you think that's actually a good fit? It seems to me like Greg Monroe is sort of an undersized power forward, whereas everybody else on this squad is kind of oversized.
Well, one thing about Milwaukee that sort of worries me is the fact there is no veteran leadership, period, on that team. They, you know, Jared Dudley left.
Yeah, they traded him to the Wizards.
And, you know, they let Ilyasova go, who was their longest tenured person, Cron Butler. But, no, they got Butler, but I don't think he's going to stick.
Yeah, there's a chance that he's just going to be...
He's going to get... But you have no... It's just, you know, it's like, this is now Jason Kidd's team. You know, they hope... You know, I hope they don't lose him. But, you know, Chris Milton, you weren't too high on the signing. I was sort of in the middle of the road.
Yeah, 5 years and $70 million. And that was a very quick re-signing. I mean, like, literally by 7 o'clock in the morning on July 1st, the deal was already kind of sealed up for Chris Middleton.
You know, that it's a very, very quick deal for somebody who, you know, was a second-round pick. And
well, I get the same fear as I get with Damari Carroll, you know. And at the end of the day, I think Middleton wound up getting less than Carroll did because Middleton doesn't have as many years under his belt as Carroll does. And he really only had one good year. But five years and $70 million for one really good year in the NBA is actually not a bad deal.
No, that's the old upside, you know, Tobias Harris will pay you even though, or Tobias Harris, even Derek Favors, like, all right, we'll give you money, you seem to be going where we want you to go, that's good. But, you know, with the Greg Monroe thing, you know, to spurn max offers from New York and L.A. to play in Milwaukee because they have a better team, you know, basically, L.A. should sort of, you know, take that as a slap in the face and be like, okay, we really need to get our shit together.
Yeah, but really, I mean, this has been going on for 2 or 3 years now with L.A. getting kind of...
Yeah, but they don't understand it, and it's just, you know, players have been bypassing them to, okay, I'm going to go to Cleveland or to play with LeBron, or I'm going to go with other superstars.
Yeah.
But now it's going to be like, I'm going to go to Milwaukee, who has nobody there.
Yeah, that's the thing I think fans get confused about with in the NBA. Big markets help in the NBA, but the NBA, at the end of the day, is not a big market-driven league. It's a superstar-driven league. And Carmelo Anthony is a superstar, mind you, but you know, there's always been rumors about him not being able to, you know, play with other people. And, you know, wherever whoever goes to New York, you're going to be second banana to Carmelo. And sort of the same fear is there with Kobe, even though he's probably only got 1 year left in L.A. And, you know, I guess Mitch Kupchak and Phil Jackson are just kind of going by the kind of the pretentious notion of, well, we're the Knicks, we're the Lakers, someone's going to take our money, we're going to fall into a, you know, we're going to fall, someone's going to fall into our lap, and it just hasn't happened yet.
Yeah. And, you know, people want to come here, and they'll drive trades to us. Therefore, they'll fall into our lap because of the media swirl and, you know.
That was the fear with the DeMarcus Cousins deal. Like, oh, look at this. The Lakers are going to steal one. And then, you know, common sense, you know, reigns supreme at the end. And, you know, even someone as dumb as Vivek Renadive, he said, no, this is a bad deal. We can't do this.
Yeah, I know, it's just like they have nothing to offer and, you know, everything. Oh, New York and LA are interested in maxing out all these people, but they have nothing to offer. They want to trade for Kevin Love. With what? The number two pick in all 7 minutes of Julius Randle? No, nobody's taking that. Mm-hmm. But, you know, other losers, Indiana.
Did you think they overpaid for Monte Ellis 4 years and $44 million?
Well, that seemed like they got Monta Ellis to sort of be the missing piece and to be the, you know, Lance Stephenson replacement. Uh-huh. But then you just, you know, you then just get rid of Roy Hibbert and there's no big man backup there.
Yeah.
Miles Turner, I think, by default is your starting center now.
Have there been official details left on the Roy Hibbert deal to the Lakers?
I think it was a couple second-round picks.
Yeah, I mean, the word was already out for quite a while with Larry Bird that Roy Hibbert was either going to opt in and get traded or he was going to opt out and Indiana wasn't going to negotiate with him. They were ready to move on. Miles Turner getting drafted really spoke to that. And I had heard rumors for a while that if Willie Cauley-Stein had fallen there, he would have taken him gladly and, you know, as the replacement for Roy Hibbert. So Hibbert getting moved didn't shock me. David West opting out for veteran minimum with San Antonio shocked me.
Yeah, giving up $11 million to go there. And
yeah, that, it's the ring quest, as I call it. You know, Rasheed Wallace did it. He turned down big money to go to Boston. Ray Allen took less to go to Miami. You know, some people, they just want to win. They get to a point in their career, they've been multiple-time All-Stars. They've had wonderful careers. They've had a lot of accolades go their way. And then they get to a point where you get into double digits on your number of seasons, and things are slowing down, and you realize, okay, maybe I need to take a back seat and play on a team that I know can help me win a championship.
Well, yeah, but, you know, plus, you know, he's already made probably like $100 million in his career, and he's like, look, I've made smart investments. I didn't squander it. Mm-hmm. So I know I could live off everything for the rest of my life and be, you know, more than happy. So, all right, let's go for a championship. But, you know, again, San Antonio didn't really screw anybody. They didn't do anything dirty. It was just...
Supposedly, their presentation of LaMarcus Aldridge was very, very simple. It wasn't like they put rings on the table. They basically just were very upfront with him and said, look, if you come here, you're going to be our starting power forward. You're going to replace Tim Duncan down the road. And you're going to be the man on a team that's going to be very well equipped to win a championship.
Yeah, you're the man. Here's our plan. Here's who we re-signed. Here's our cap space. Mm-hmm. Here's where you fit in. Oh, but you could be in movies if you want to be.
Now, everybody wants to give the San Antonio Spurs like an A+, you know, with the acquisitions that they had, also re-signing, Ginobili and Duncan, probably smaller deals. The deal I had heard about Ginobili was somewhere around the $3 million range annually over 2 years. Duncan, no one's sure yet about the terms, but it's likely that he'll probably take 1 to 2 years, somewhere around the $6 to $7 million range, if that's fair. Signing Danny Green at 4 years at $45 million was very sneaky. Like, I didn't know how they pulled off that deal.
Why? You thought that was a good deal?
Very good deal. I think Danny Green's one of the five best shooters in the NBA.
See, I just don't, you know, I just don't see it.
He's making $4 million less than Damari Carroll.
You know, I've already said that. I just don't see him as being that, you know, elite player. But, again, they lost, you know, Corey Joseph. They lost Marco Bellinelli. They lost Tiago Splitter.
Yeah.
So they lost a lot of smallness on their team. They lost a lot of the speed they had.
They lost their depth, too. You know, that was something that really, you know, showed what helped them win that championship in 2014. They had amazing depth, you know, mostly involving, you know, international talent. And they were able to re-sign Patty Mills last year and Boris Diaw, so they're still in the fold for quite a while. Kyle Anderson's still on a rookie deal.
Yeah, plus they'll, you know, odds are they'll get one or two veterans who'll be like, oh, I'll take them in, you know, like a Jameer Nelson to be like, oh, I'll chase a ring.
Yeah.
You know, all that usual ring fodder.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I don't, you know, it was...
Like, would you give the Spurs an A+, or do you have some worries like I do?
I wouldn't say A+, because, you know, losing Bellinelli is a big, you know, he was a major cog in their championship.
Oh, yeah, he was a great three-point shooter, he was a great free-throw shooter, so you couldn't foul him.
Yeah, so it was, you know, but again, you can give him an A because they didn't have to blow up their roster in hoping Aldridge would come, like, you know, other panic team, Phoenix Suns.
Yeah, they did that one deal involving, like we were talking about, Caron Butler, and they also traded away Reggie
Marcus
Bullock
Morris
and Marcus Morris, you know, one of the Morris twins, to Detroit, basically as a, you know, a desperation move so that they can clear some cap space because they thought that they had a real shot at LaMarcus Aldridge after they had their talks with him and his agent, and then they wound up with Tyson Chandler on a slight overpay, but. Being that he's a big man, I can kind of understand it at the end of the day. You know, good defensively, offensively, a lot more efficient than people give him credit for.
It's an overpay because of his age.
Yeah, he's 30. Is he 31 or 33?
I was going to say 32, I thought.
Somewhere in there. So,
but, you know, it's not the fact that he's 32. It's just, you know, he's the high school kid who already has... like 14 years under his belt.
And his best days are past him, let's be honest.
Yeah, and, you know, and just the Brandon Knight re-signing is a question mark, because now you have the same exact problem you had before with Bledsoe and Dragic.
What'll shock you is that was their number one priority going into the free agency. They wanted to re-sign Brandon Knight.
Yeah, you let, you let Gerald Green go, you let all your other guards go. So you have these two running guards, and you got slow-ass molasses Chandler and Alex Len.
Yeah, and your new shooter is Devin Booker, but it's going to take a while for him to come on up. You know, you also got some of the other young talents that they have, like T.J. Warren, Alex Len. So some people are worried about Len's role with the Phoenix Suns going forward after, now that Chandler's there.
It'll be fine. It's just, you know, I think both of them are just going to sort of play 25 minutes apiece because...
Yeah, that's fair
for Len. Spell each other because Len has injury problems and Chandler can't pull 40 minutes a night anymore. But it's just like you trade a lot of your depth and, you know, Booker... As much as you like him, I didn't see much defense from him. And basically, in the NBA, if you can't play defense, you're not going to play.
Yeah, he's got a lot to learn, of course. You know, that goes without saying when you're a rookie. And, I mean, I feel like Phoenix has done a decent job with some of their with drafting and being able to pick up small pieces, but they're starting to let them go. You know, they had the trade involving Brandon Knight where they let Isaiah Thomas go, who really didn't have a bad deal, and they just lumped him into a trade with the Celtics. You know, what was the other one that they wound up trading Tyler Ennis for basically nothing in that deal. You know, so it feels like Phoenix was sort of getting into the mode of we need to catch a big fish, and then they sort of kind of yanked the pull out at the last second. It's like, nah, we're good. But now you wind up with a very, very incomplete roster, a roster that's very, very uneven.
Yeah, it's very uneven and not, you know, I don't see much playoffs from them.
I don't see it either. I would be,
you know, it's like you gave a lot of money and your team really didn't get better.
Let's talk about teams that stood pat, and we'll, you know, you already talked about Cleveland, so we'll talk about them in a second. But first I want to get to, you know, LeBron's former team, the Miami Heat. Did you think it was safe for them to stand pat, even though they paid pretty good money to keep guys in the fold like Dwayne Wade on a one-year, you know, $20 million deal? Can't blame Wade for that one. And I can't blame the Heat either because they could just cut ties with Wade if they feel like he's slipping. And then they re-signed Goran Dragic to what was close to a max deal, 5 years, about $92 million. Luol Deng opted in. So we're basically going to see the team that we never really got a chance to see because of Chris Bosh's lung injury going forward next season, barring injury again, along with Justice Winslow that they added into the fold. So did you think it was a good safe bet for them to stand pat and try to re-sign what they had on file?
Well, we already mentioned they did their free agent shopping last year with Whiteside and
But
and
they
Bill
also
Walker
re-signed a lot of guys that year, too. They kept Chris Anderson. They kept Mario
Chalmers. Yeah, but I'm saying they all the most of their deals they've done there, you know, with their cap room, you know, they've already did their, you know, roster filling out. Mm-hmm. And if they lost Dwayne Wade, it might be a different story, I think, because that's a big hole. And, you know, he's on a downswing. He's injured. But you're not going to replace his skill set with two players half the value.
Yeah, but I like that with Pat Riley, because unlike Kobe, where they gave him 2 years upwards to $25 million, and it wound up that, you know, injuries have gotten the best of him. Whereas with Wade, 1 year and $20 million in this cap where you're going to have to pay over the luxury for one season, that's actually, to be honest, not a bad idea. I felt like that was actually pretty smart.
Well, that was just the, you know, he was like, look, guys, I've taken less for 5 years to get these two guys in. The least you could do is sort of overpay me for a year. Okay.
Yeah.
That's if they're not Kobe, like, you know, okay, this is the legacy deal.
Yeah,
you know,
but, and the weird part is that it's not like, it's not Dwayne Wade betting on himself. It's like the Heat betting on Dwayne Wade betting on himself, if that makes any sense.
No, it's just, you know, I don't see as anybody betting on anybody. It's just the, all right, you wanted to get paid. Okay, you'll get, you know, you opted out. You had a 1 year deal. We'll give you a little bump. You know, here's your loyalty raise. Mm-hmm. You know, your deal was, you know, your deal's expiring anyways. So, okay, you know,
well, he forced their hand with the opt out and got pretty aggressive with a lot of chit chat about, you know, talking with the Lakers and talking with this team and maybe going back to Cleveland, which I thought was funny at the time. I don't mean going back to Cleveland for Dwayne Wade. I mean going to Cleveland and play with LeBron again, you know.
You know, he did, but, you know, again, like I said, it wasn't, and I don't think anybody's betting anybody. It was just all right, you did good, here's a couple extra million. Other teams that stayed pat, Denver, because there's nothing they can do. Mm-hmm. Golden State, nothing they really can do.
Yeah, 5 years, $85 million for Draymond Green, pretty fair.
75.
Oh, it was 75 now?
Yeah, it wasn't a max deal, it was just less, because he has no value really outside of Golden State, and they sort of realize that, like, look, you're not a max player because nobody wants to pay you the max because you're sort of a system guy.
Yeah, they kept Leandro Barbosa also on a smaller deal. We were kind of wondering what was going to happen there. It wound up.
Maybe Barbosa. You were all right with 85. Huh? Maybe you were.
It's somewhere in that range. It might
less
fluctuate.
Than the max. It's less than he could have gotten, but
it's less than what Dragic got, which is less than what. Which is less than what Damian Lillard got. You know?
It's all less what Anthony Davis got. We'll just leave it at that.
Now, you know what? Let's talk about the Pelicans for just a second. Because they were weird, because they kind of stood pat with re-signings, but I would call them winners and losers because, you know, sealing up Anthony Davis, regardless of how much money you had to sign him for to stay, you can't go wrong there because he's one of the three or four best players in the NBA. He might be the best player in the NBA in the next 3 or 4 years. But re-signing Alexis Ajinka, keeping Omer Sheik for somewhere in the area of, like, you know, 44 to 58 million over five years.
Yeah, but you know
years.
What? We've gone back and forth on these two signings, and yeah, they overpaid Sheik, and apparently you and I were bigger fans of him than a lot of people were. A lot of people are like, that's a horrible deal, that he was worse on the floor with Davis and they can't play together and blah, blah, blah. But, you know, essentially those two are just Davis insurance.
Mm-hmm. Well, the thing is, too, Gentry is obviously an offensively driven coach. You know, that's his bread and butter. The metrics on Ajinka and Davis on the same court, on the court together, their efficiency on offense together was so much higher than with Ajinka. So maybe that's why they wanted to keep Ajinka so that they could – because even though he – I mean, the deal that they got him was somewhere around 4 years and $20 million. I think that's an overbuy. But if he's a guy that can come in and be a decent role player, off, you know, and has decent size and he's familiar with the Pelicans organization, maybe it's a good deal. But I question it. And I do not like the Omer Sheik signing at all.
Okay.
There's just so many. There's just a lot of worries there. I think by the time you get to year four, he's going to be washed up. I guess Gentry sees him sort of like a poor man's Andrew Bogut, but I just don't see it there. I feel like his defense is not great.
Well, it's a new system, so you know who knows. We'll give it a shot. Like I said, I just see that as in case Davis goes down, you have a Sheik and a Ajinka who can play together and. It's you have somebody, you just don't have a big gaping hole.
Another team that stood pat was the Houston Rockets, but that didn't shock us at all, right?
No, they didn't shock us, and really, you know, it'll hurt them if they lose Josh Smith. We don't know what he's doing. I don't even know if he knows what he's doing.
Mm-hmm. You know, they got Beverly on 4 years at $23 million. Corey Brewer, he's got a weird contract where he's got $18 million guaranteed over 3 years, but then it goes down to $5 million on a team option after his fourth year. I think age is kind of going against him there. I think he just reached 30. So maybe that's why. But Brewer plays best basketball after he got traded to Houston. Beverly is there. I'm pretty sure we're going to see the same faces there between Harden, Dwight Howard, you know, Pablo Prigioni, and a lot of those other Clint Capella, you know, along with some of the draft picks that they had, like Sam Decker. I think basically it's the same Houston Rockets that we saw in the Western Conference Finals. I can't really blame them. But what I found interesting about it is that Daryl Morey has always been a guy that likes to tinker with his roster. You know, he does the money ball approach, you know, to his team. He kind of is like the, you know, they call him Dork Elvis because he's so big on analytics and, you know, he was kind of like the godfather of it in basketball, always trying to make, like, small adjustments to try to get his team over the hump. But doesn't it feel like Daryl Morey is kind of settled on his team and he's not, and there's no more improvements that he can make. This is pretty much what he's got.
You could say that, yes, but at the same time, he had meetings with Aldridge.
Yeah, he tried.
So, you know, he's never going to be content. That probably, you know, that seems to be their undoing is, you know, for better or worse, that's your team. You're going to have Harden and you have Howard for the next 2 years, so.
The Grizzlies standing pat with Marc Gasol. I mean,
the Grizzlies didn't stand pat. They just doubled down.
Yeah,
they said we don't know how to shoot. We're gonna get more big men.
It's the least shocking thing ever. You know, then they lost Kufos, so they got Brandon Wright. They actually got Brandon Wright before Kufos signed with the Kings, so they had already kind of played their hand of, you know, we're gonna get an insurance big in the open market rather than try to overpay for Kufos, who wound up getting 4 years and $33 million from Sacramento. Good for Kostas Kufos. I think that's kind of his going rate as a big man anyway. And now let's talk about the Cleveland Cavaliers who, I mean, we talk about opening the checkbook. They opened the fucking mint to try to keep this team in the hunt for an NBA championship next season. The way it's playing out with, you know, Kevin Love being re-signed, Iman Shumpert got re-signed at a $10 million salary. Kevin Love's was about 5 years, $110 million, pretty close to max, if not higher. And then you had Tristan Thompson. He's likely to get re-signed around the $15 to $14 million range. LeBron James, he is an unrestricted free agent by name, but he's likely to sign like $21 to $23 million one-year deal. Dan Gilbert is taking a big, big chance here in the interim. He's going to have to pay out big time in the luxury tax. I would anticipate that it's going to be well over $100 million in the luxury tax, but is it worth it?
If he wins the championship, it is. Because, you know, it doesn't matter whether or not you bought it. In the end, you are always going to be known as a champion, which is what you want. So
committing $240 million on the first day of free agency is unprecedented.
You know, it doesn't help when Kevin Love takes up half of it, pretty much.
Well, Kevin Love, at the end of the day, he really was a good fit in Cleveland. You know, they seemed to really be figuring it out before the injury against Boston. You know, they looked like dynamite in that series.
Well, put it this way. Was he a good fit? He put up the same numbers as Bosch in Miami. It was just like, well, how can he be the third fiddle? How is he like? And it's like, no, the numbers were exactly the same. It's just, you know, he's like, okay, I'm cool with it. And maybe, you know, he's not that top five player people sort of thought he was.
Did it shock you that Kevin Love had basically made up his mind to go back to Cleveland like a long time ago, like even before the finals began?
No, it didn't really shock me because where are you going to go? The teams with the max money have really crap rosters, and let's say LeBron does leave, you still have 4 years with Kyrie Irving.
Yeah.
So your roster is never going to be bad if you have a top five point guard.
Yeah, but LeBron's the cog. I mean, obviously the reason why Thompson is such a priority for them renegotiating is because LeBron and Tristan Thompson have the same agent. So it's likely that Thompson's deal is going to get done before LeBron does his.
That's what he's waiting on. He's like, I refuse to sign until you sign him.
What's the chances of LeBron taking a multi-year max deal this offseason?
Slim to none. Mm-hmm. The only way he'll take a max deal is if he gets, if he has like a jet ski accident and.
Like, I mean, you could do 5 years and 145.
You know? He can, but he's not going to. And, you know, next year he'll be the worst contract of all time when he tries to sign his, you know, 5 year, $200 million or whatever. And that year five, when he's making $40 million and can barely walk.
Well, I mean, we said that we said LeBron may have been slipping a little bit, and then in the NBA Finals, he had one of the best individual performances I've
he
ever
did,
seen
but,
on a basketball
know,
player. You know,
we've seen him, but that was the best, you know, best performance of a power forward we've ever seen. Mm-hmm. He was like a shooting guard in Miami.
Yes.
Slashing and shooting threes
was,
and running all around.
He was more of a point forward, whereas he was,
exactly.
Forced,
now
he was forced to play point forward in the finals, but that's not really what his role is now in Cleveland.
He's slowing down, and I'm saying 5 years from now, you think, you know, it's, I don't think he's going to stay healthy over 5 years with that mileage that he already has now, and he's already sort of slowing down. Yeah, that was the best performance, but you're not going to see that from a 35-year-old LeBron.
Or so we think. I mean, that man has pulled off some incredible things. Now, at that age, sure. Like, you know, look at Kevin Garnett. Kevin Garnett will be reaching his 40s by the time his deal is done in Minnesota.
Well, that's the same thing. Look at Kevin Garnett. He used to go from the, you know, most dominant power forward to becoming a stretch four.
Mm-hmm.
And that's all he was in Boston, was just, you know, okay, I'll be the one of the most dominant stretch fours there are, and I'm just going to hover around the college three-point line.
There were so many deals that Cleveland made. Not too many new additions. The only one I can really think of right now is that they signed over Mo Williams, who's an old buddy of LeBron's, you know, when he was in Cleveland the first time. Try to rate just the, like, your favorite Cleveland move and then your least favorite Cleveland move.
The least favorite Cleveland move would be Tristan Thompson, who, you know, he's just a poor man DeAndre Jordan right
now.
He gave
a rebounder $80 million.
Yeah, that's all he's going to be, and you have, you still have Varish out there, who's take up a lot of money, and he's going to get overpaid. Schumpert, sort of an overpay.
That's the one I didn't like. Like, I think they should have given that money to J.R. Smith.
Mo Williams, you know, J.R. Smith's money went to Mo Williams.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, he's older now, but that's a solid.
Yeah, but Mo's still got that offensive punch. I mean, he had a 50-point game when he was still with Minnesota. He played really well in Charlotte when he got traded there in the midseason. So I actually think that might work out okay for Cleveland. And then, you know, Kevin Love at max level, I guess that would be my favorite deal because Love is still at an all-star level as a power forward in the NBA. The Schumpert one, though, kind of worries me. I don't think he's worth $10 million a year.
Well, you know, again, 3-and-D. You're overpaying for that now, and that's a new home. So, okay, I will leave you. We got, let's say, you know, two questions real quick.
Mm-hmm.
Is the West the dominance and the West is superiority? Is it sort of, did it take a little chink in the armor? Now that there's only, I think we can sort of agree, it's only a two-team race now in the West. It's Golden State and San Antonio.
Did the Clippers get that much worse losing DeAndre Jordan? I mean, they brought in Paul Pierce and Lance Stephenson.
Brought in Paul Pierce, but you got smaller. You've moved Blake to the five.
Mm-hmm.
Who's playing four? And you're going to have, you know, I don't even know who the trade away Spencer Hawes, who
was
horrible as
the Warriors are still, you know, a lot of people would argue that the West is just as strong, if not stronger. You know, the Warriors are still going to be around, along with the championship that they're going to be defending.
What's two-team race? Warriors and Spurs. Houston, we sort of saw them peaked. And if you're losing Josh Smith, that's sort of a big, that hurts them.
I think he's going to stay at the end of the day.
Okay, if he stays. And we, you know, obviously we'll revisit this all in the team previews in September, but you know, I think the, you know, well, you have eight teams in the West that could beat, you know, that are better than the top, you know, two teams in the East. I
think the depth of the Western Conference took a hit. You know,
I think
Dallas is in trouble. I think New Orleans is on the rise, but I'm not sure how much of a leap they're actually going to take. I think that might be a situation where they benefit from some of the teams that were ahead of them sort of dropping down. Portland is RIP.
Portland is done, and if you have Oklahoma City, who arguably you could say is the fourth best team in the West by doing nothing,
mm-hmm.
that means a lot of teams sort of fell down, I think.
Yeah, I mean, the Southwest is still incredibly strong. If your worst team in that division is the Dallas Mavericks, that's pretty good. You know, I can't argue that. You know, a team that still has Dirk Nowitzki, and they brought in DeAndre Jordan and Wesley Matthews. Now, how they round out the rest of the roster,
that's the thing. You know, obviously this is way too early to tell, but, you know, oh, well, they have, you know, three superstars, but you have an incomplete bench. You have, you know, Portland, they just got assorted backup fodder, and, you know, Clippers went down a notch. Houston went down a notch. Memphis, they're sort of the ultimate X factor because we don't really know what they could give us. Mm-hmm. And really, I almost want to say they're an ACL injury to Connelly away from being in the lottery.
Well, not just that. You know, you say that the West may have taken a chink in their armor, but did the East really get that much stronger, though? I mean, it feels like the East is almost even more disproportional but towards Cleveland.
Well, it's disproportionate towards Cleveland, but Chicago didn't get any worse. And
yeah, they re-signed Mike Dunleavy.
Miami is going to be back where they probably were and should have been, barring, you know, from the injury standpoint. Mm-hmm. And you have teams, I'm saying, on a downward, you know, in 1 year it's not going to all be over, but I'm saying that slow, gradual decline.
Yeah, the teams that peaked.
We seen the peak of the West?
Yes, I would say we did last year. Last year was about as good as it gets. You had teams that didn't make the playoffs that were really, really good. You know, and in this case, we might see teams that are in the bottom of the West where we're saying to ourselves, well, that's not a really good team, you know?
You know, like we see with Denver, like on paper, they look pretty good. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, but Dallas, they got DeAndre Jordan, but, well, they can't really put together. Oh, here comes the coaching change, and now they're sort of dysfunctional. And, you know, but I guess at the end of this, which is a good sign, is you now have teams like Minnesota where players want to play there. Milwaukee, people are going there. And that's a good thing, as opposed to just the usual, okay, Minnesota, they never could get
It disperses the talent evenly, whereas, you know, when teams want, when the players have the freedom to sign elsewhere, they're not just gravitating towards five or four kind of main hot spots. They're all kind of taking their money here, taking their money there, taking a winning situation here and there. And so it's, you know, I think, I agree with you there. I feel like things are a little bit more even, Steven, you know, for the, you know, for teams that are trying to, that are getting better in the free agency, whether it be through a trade or through free agency. It doesn't feel like, you know, the rich are getting richer and the poor are getting poorer.
Yeah, it's,
And you said you had one more question after the West question?
Yes. Who, outside of Portland, who just killed their playoff chances? Period.
Their playoff chances.
Like, who just played themselves out of the playoffs?
I could go either East or West with this. I would probably say, just because I don't feel like they got better, the Charlotte Hornets, I felt like, really struck out in the free agency. I think they're going to be one of the worst teams in the league next year.
Okay.
Now they were barely. I mean, they weren't even. They were 33-49, for God's sakes. You know.
You know. Again, I mean, this is just. You know, we're talking week one of the free agency. We got training camp. We got tons of trades that'll still happen. We got roster fill outs. This is just the early. You know, first impressions. So.
Yeah. So I mean,
anything can happen.
Yeah, it's got that new car smell to it a little bit. So it's going to be fun. You know, to be discussing kind of the continuance of the free agency, because we're not all the way there yet, even though we feel like a lot of the deals have kind of been summed up. We'll probably be back, talk a little bit about Summer League, because me and Adam are kind of like weirdly fascinated with Summer League basketball. We're not like, you know, it's kind of shocking. You know, Adam doesn't really like watching a lot of that. You don't like watching kind of like that small time basketball, but Summer League.
It's funny. I will watch more Summer League action than I will like ESPN. Like, oh, look, it's Chicago and San Antonio. Nope. Oh, look, here's you know, the bag boy at my local grocer's next week in the D-League.
Yeah.
Oh, I got to watch that.
Yeah, Summer League's more of a curiosity. You know, you see these former college stars, you're like, oh, yeah, that guy. And then,
it's just
you know,
like, yeah.
The score doesn't even matter. They play 10 minutes.
No, the score is all horrible. The players are all horrible. And most of the draft picks do nothing. And you have, like, you know, Skeetish, you know, Nicholas Skeetishvili was like an MVP of there. And all of a sudden, he's disappeared. But it's just like, you know, oh, I remember him. And, oh, this was an old draft pick. And, oh, this is, you know, oh, here's, I remember him. Oh, here's what his career was. Oh, he played for this team.
And then the real intrigue, you get to see the rookies and the ones that kind of stand out. Like, we already seen Stanley Johnson for the Pistons. He's good. And then Justice Winslow for Miami, it seems like he's doing well. But, I mean, we're just in the Utah, Orlando portion now. You know, Utah, they're actually, shockingly, they're actually playing in the Delta Center. And then in Orlando, they're playing in basically a gym.
They're playing in their practice.
Then they go to the Thomas Mack Center, I think, in Las Vegas to play the, you know, the Summer League games.
No, they have, like, two gyms. They got, like, the women's, like, volleyball court has, like, a tiny one, and then there's the big... Yeah, Thomas Mack, which
the Las Vegas Summer League is always fun. There's always
that's the big one because there's 20 teams there, and you know it's a tourist. If it weren't like a billion and a half degrees there, it'd be fun to go to. But then my wife would probably just shoot me. Oh, going to Vegas in the summer? Why, to see basketball?
See really bad basketball where they all wear the same color jerseys.
Well, you know, it's been a chaotic off season, but it's, you know, it's good that it was done quick for us at least, as opposed to being dragged out having part seven of.
Well, last year with LeBron, you know, decision part two had dragged it on for so long because he didn't make his decision to go back to Cleveland until like the middle of July or maybe early July, after about a week and a half, and that dragged everything down. Like they were waiting for what LeBron was going to do.
And you just wait for that one play. Now they don't have that this year, which is kind of cool to see. You know, the essential roster fill outs like a Shane Larkin, like a Jonas Jerebko, like a
Gary Neal who went with
to see these guys already find their new team. It's like, okay, now we could see, you know, what the GM is doing, what the team's going to sort of look like, as opposed to, all right, well, in 3 weeks we'll know what LeBron does, so hopefully we get two more guys down and just the tiers go. So that was good.
You know, one more for the road. Aaron Baines, 3 years, around $20 million. Explain.
There's, you know, some deals are just question marks.
I don't know. Detroit has not really been winning.
Van Gundy has a vision.
I don't know what that vision
is. Do any of us know what the vision is? But he's doing stuff. He's signing players he wants. He got Ilya Sova. He got Baines. He's paying for the guys he wants. It's just I don't.
Yeah.
Get
at least
it?
That's the point of free agency. It's all about taking chances. And if you don't take chances, are you happy with what you have? You know? And you don't have a lot of time to make that to tinker the roster until you get to February. So whatever you got it. You know, and it's been enjoyable, you know, for, you know, talking about this episode about kind of all the new shifts in the rosters and how it might, you know, shift the balance of power between the conferences. But on behalf of Adam Murray, this is Andrew Reich. We're going to be catching you.